follow Davian's lead and not use the microphone. I don't know what to say to follow this panel today. This is an incredible inspiration. We've been up in Oakland fighting, and to come down here in Los Angeles and Anaheim and Downey and hear about the fights that are taking place down here, when you all are speaking about what's happening in Anaheim and Downey, it's exactly what is happening in Oakland. Right down to the dynamics of the city council meetings, right down to the politicians that will look you in the face and step on your foot as they turn their back on you. And that has happened over and over and over again. And I just want to say a few remarks before we open it up. Because I think here we are in the Southern California Library, we are a new generation of people that is unfortunately going to have to make our own history again. And if you look at the history of this country, there's really two types of history in this country. There is the history of the slave owners who took millions of people from Africa and brought them here to murder them in the fields, to rape them, to oppress them, to tell them that they were not human beings. And there is the history of the slave resistance. There's the Nat Turners and the Sojourner Truths. Jack's reading a book on John Brown and Harriet Tubman on the way down here. And he gets up early in the morning, this one. There's that history. There's the history. We're here in Los Angeles. Kind of sounds like it used to be part of a different country. This country was built on the back of stealing half of Mexico and then telling people who are Latino that they don't have the right to be here and to get a job. So there's their history, right. And then there's the history of the Dream Act kids who are sitting in, who are saying to you, you will have to deport me before I shut my mouth. Have unions in this country, we'd all be working 65 hours a week. Right. We used to work 40. They got it backed up to about 50 now, if you can get a job. Right. But without the unions, we'd all be working 65 hours a week for $4 an hour. And that's what they want to go back to. Right. I'll tell you one thing. I don't usually believe anything Mitt Romney says. But when Mitt Romney says, on behalf of the rich people in this country, that half of this country isn't worth anything, they're freeloaders, they never worked a day in their life, I believe Mitt Romney believes that. And I believe that all of his kind believe that. And they've always believed that. They think we're dirt. They literally think that they are smarter and better, and they deserve their wealth. They deserve not to be wealthy. What do we think is wealthy? If I had a couple $100,000, even split between us, I think we're kind of doing pretty well today. That's not wealth. Wealth is billions and trillions of dollars.
Yes.
And so when they destroyed the economy a few years ago and forced, what's the foreclosure rate in Downey? What's the foreclosure rate in Anaheim? What's the foreclosure rate in Stockton, in Oakland?
That's right.
You look at the foreclosure rates in the poorest, the black, the Latino, the poor white working class neighborhoods, the bankers took your house, and then they took our money and they gave it back to the bank. Now, that brings us up to another question. Why do we have police? And I'm just going to let that thought sit with you for a second. Why do we have police? And what I would argue is that while it is true that sometimes there's a good cop here and there, and people tell me they've met him, while it is true that there are some people out there who believe they're trying to do the right thing by being cops, and it's often said that one bad apple spoils the whole barrel, unfortunately, I think the whole barrel is spoiled, and if you put a good apple into it, it's going to ruin that apple. So where are we at today? They have destroyed the economy for working class people. They have built an entirely new system that Michelle Alexander, in a brilliant book called The New Jim Crow, explains that the generations of struggle to end slavery, then to get the right to vote, and that took 300 years just to get the right to vote, that struggle against Jim Crow in the 1960s, which we won, and this is an important lesson for history, that sometimes we do win things. Damien was talking about standing up and winning a little bit of respect. That's important, to win a little battle, to push them back, to make them look you in the eye, even if they're still going to beat you and put you in prison. If you make them look you in the eye, that matters. That quantity of respect that you can exact from them, that matters. But the problem is, if we leave these people in power, even when we win bigger victories, we won unions in the 1930s. We had 35% of the working class in unions until 1970. Today we have 11% of the unions, of people in the unions. We won civil rights and voting rights. We beat Jim Crow in the 1960s and 70s. They are reconstructing Jim Crow. They are reconstructing an anti-union country. They are reconstructing the fact that if you're from Mexico, you don't belong here. If we beat them, they come back. Yeah. And I think that's an important lesson. We learn it in the big historical moments, but we also learn it in the day-to-day battles. So that when you get that little respect, the Downey City Council had to look you in the eye the next time, but they're also not stupid. And they like being on top. These people are not like, you know, I was up here for a little while, I was really rich, I was filling my pockets with your cash. You know, I'm going to give that up and go back to being a poor working class slob. They don't think that way. They think we're on top and we're going to stay there. So as much as we learn from each other, unfortunately, these people also learn from each other. So I think that we've got to develop a set of strategy and tactics, which means that in the next decades to come, we're in a battle not just to reform this or that part of the system, but we have to change the whole thing. So we have to ask, why do we have 2.5 million people in prison? What is the purpose of that? Is that an accident? Is that a bad policy? Is that a mistake? I would submit to you that it is not a mistake. It is not, from their point of view, a bad policy. From the point of view of the rich, it's a good policy. Because if you get out of line, and if you start to protest like the people in Occupy did, then guess what? They've got an army that will come in and crush you. If you set up a tent in a public place in Iowa, they've got tanks and turtle suits ready to come and tear gas your ass and drag you up to jail. They've got 2 million police. They've got a system that is ready to defend their wealth, and they are ready to go. Which means that we can't be foolish. We can't just think this is going to be a short battle. We can't think that we're going to sneak around them, that we're going to pull some sort of move and get justice. It's going to be a long, hard battle. And I think that our history shows that we're a kind of people who knows how to go in for a battle like that. There's all sorts of myths in American history that they'll teach you. One of my favorite myths is about Rosa Parks. Everybody probably knows this, right? Rosa Parks, hero of the civil rights movement. Why did the Montgomery bus boycott start in 1955? Why did the civil rights movement start in the 1960s? Well, Rosa Parks, she was a seamstress, and she was tired, and so she wanted to sit down on the bus. And she just, you know, was tired and just couldn't take it anymore, and so she sat down. And that's what they, and then nice people did good things, and we got rid of Jim Crow. The reality is that Rosa Parks was trained by the people who helped put up this building, the radicals and the communists and the socialists. The Rosa Parks was an organizer. She was the chapter chair of the NAACP. She went to meeting after meeting after meeting. And guess what? She sat down on the bus before, and it didn't happen. And people sat down on the buses for decades before Rosa Parks sat down on the bus in 1975. We are learning to sit down on the bus, if you will. Now, I think we have to stand up, so maybe we got to sit down and then stand up. I'm not quite sure what the thing is. But the idea that she simply sat down on the bus and then people realized how wrong it was and they granted civil rights, it took 10 years of struggle between when she sat down on that bus to even get the Voting Rights Act in 1965, which the Republicans want to tear up and throw away. 10 years just to get the right to vote in America, after it had been guaranteed 150 years before. So when we say we're fighting for justice, we want to win justice for Alan Bluford, which means we want Masso fired, we want his ass prosecuted and put in jail for murder one, not manslaughter, 2 years in the county jail. Murder one. This guy is, as somebody said, is a serial killer. This guy is a danger to society. Now, so I'll just say that. We want that justice. We want the justice for the folks in Anaheim. We want justice for the individuals who are suffering this system. But we also have to understand that there's a fight that is going to be created by all these people coming together. What is this system creating? This system is creating destruction. It is creating death and racism and poverty. But it's also creating a generation of people who are saying, we're not taking it anymore. We're going to stand up for what is right. We're going to stand up. That is the most dangerous thing. That is the most dangerous thing. They would deal with as much crime as you can imagine. They don't care about crime. Crime is a moneymaker for them. When I'm not talking about corporate crime, of course they love corporate crime. They steal our houses, when they rob other people's country, all that sort of crime is fine. But the poor person to poor person crime, They don't care about that. You hear all these crocodile tears from the politicians about black and black violence. They do not care about that at all. In fact, it's a moneymaker for them.
Yes.
They would rather take the money out of the schools and the hospitals and the jobs programs so that they can have a bigger police program, so that they can arrest and beat the people who don't have a job or education or health care in the first place and take it out on each other. It's a moneymaker for them. So when you hear the politicians talk about, oh, we're so concerned about the wave of black and black violence, we're the ones who care about the violence in our communities. We're the ones who say we have a solution, which is take the trillions of dollars you gave to the Bank of America and Wells Fargo and invest it in our communities. Why don't you build 100 new schools in Los Angeles instead of laying off the teachers? Why don't you build 100 new hospitals and put everybody to work? You've got the cash in your pockets.
I don't have the cash in my pocket.
The estimate is that corporations in America today are sitting on $2 trillion in liquid assets in their bank accounts. They refuse to invest it because they'd rather play the stock market and they'd rather watch us fight amongst ourselves.
Yeah.
I didn't say billion. I said $2 trillion, which is 2,000 times more than $1 billion. Now, if anybody's wealthy in here, we'll talk about making a bigger donation to the meeting than us. But that's not even money. When you start talking about trillions of dollars, it's no longer money. It's no longer cash. What it is, it's power. And when they have $2 trillion, it means that they are literally killing our children by holding them under the water of community violence and joblessness and the lack of education and health care. They are drowning our children by holding that cash. So I will just wrap up by saying this. They are creating a generation of people like they have done in the past, like the people who resisted slavery, like the people who resisted the invasion of Mexico, like the people who stood up for the working class, like the people who stood up for civil rights and voting rights for women. I wanted to give a special shout out to that poem. You gotta perform that poem all over the world. People gotta hear that poem again and again and again and again. I get to come up to Oakland and perform that poem at the next city council meeting in Oakland so that the city councilors understand we're not that dumb. We don't think this just started happening last week. It's been happening for 20 years, and 40 years, and 200 years.
Yes.
And so we've got to understand that this is a long fight, but they are creating a generation of people who are saying, we're not going to take it any longer. And I think that that is, unfortunately, amongst all this grief, amongst all this pain, amongst all of the suffering that these families are going through, we have a duty to stand up on their behalf. But we have a duty to stand up for all of us, because it's going to take all of us in order to create a social movement that is powerful enough to go up against their state. They've got 2.5 million cops. They've got 2.5 million people in prison. They've got trillions of dollars, and they intend to keep it that way. If we think we're going to challenge their priorities and force them to give up some of that cash and to shut down the prisons and open schools, then we need to go from what we have now, which is an excellent start. We've sat down on the bus. We've started organizing. We've got protests of dozens and hundreds of people. We need to figure, how do we get protests of thousands of people? How do we spread the Chicago teacher strike from Chicago to every school? Prison now, but at the end of the day, that's not enough, because you can just replace one bad apple with another. We want, as Geraldine said at a meeting in Oakland last Wednesday, she said, where are the community centers for our youth? Where are the grief counselors in our communities? Where are the hospitals? Where are the teachers? We need to take their money, which they stole from us in the first place, and put it back into our communities. And I think it's going to be a long fight. I think no one should kid themselves that this is going to be over in a couple of years. This is a lifelong fight to decide whether or not our priorities of humanity and decency and solidarity can destroy their priorities of greed and violence. I have hope, not because I look at the situation right now and say, we're almost there. Unfortunately, I have hope because I look at the people here at this panel and the people in this room, and I think we can get there.
Yeah.